Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the New Energy Experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the podcast. In today's episode, we're looking at heat as a service, which is emerging across the European heating market. Loyal listeners will know we've previously looked at this topic, featuring guests ranging from large incumbents such as ENGIE to startups such as the Mondoan Factory. And we're looking at it again today because, in my view, this is a really important trend in the heating market. It's a macro trend, the trend from products to services that you can see in many industries. And in Europe, it's now starting to pick up more and more momentum in the heating sector. It's a way to help open up the market for high efficiency but higher cost heating appliances and more sophisticated controls. And it's starting to cause some disruption to the relatively conservative heating industry. So today, I'm delighted that we're looking at it again, featuring some of the disruption from the leading edge in Denmark and Germany, from the perspective of industry heavyweight Viessmann and the hugely successful Danish district heating industry, now branching out into heat as a service with individual heat pumps. Plus, of course, our usual Delta EE expert to guide us through the topic. So let's say hello to our guests. First, Andreas Bauhausen, Managing Director of Viessmann Solutions and Services. Hello, Andreas.
Hello, John.
Andreas, Viessmann is famous for being one of Europe's leading manufacturers of heating appliances. And the bulk of your business is doing exactly that, making appliances and selling appliances via installers. So tell us a bit about the solutions and services business and what you're doing with Heat as a Service today.
Yeah, thank you, John. I'm delighted to give you some background. So we see that heating as a service is one of the mega trends in the energy market. We see that in a lot of other business, that we see a conversion from selling product to selling services. So we looked at Viessmann how to copy this for the heating market and introduced the product in an MVP status in 2018, had in 2019 the ramp up by offering three main products. The first product is the Viessmann Basic, which is just installing the device, financing the device, and operating the device over a period of 10 to 15 years. The second product is the Viessmann Flex, where we also deliver the energy. And the third one is the Viessmann Green Plus, where we use natural gas, biogas, and also give the customer the opportunity to use smart heating devices like smart thermostats.
Okay, so you've got a spectrum of offerings from the first one you described, it sounds more like a lease or finance package, through to something that's more of a complete heat as a service offering.
Yeah, that's correct. So the first one is not just leasing. That's very important. Yeah. It's a combination of leasing and servicing. Otherwise, yeah, we would have problems with the German regulation. But okay, you're correct. And we use in these products different technologies. So customer can decide for gas boilers, for oil boilers, and heat pumps as well.
And you said the ramp up started in 2019, so last year. I imagine this is still a relatively small part of your business. Are you able to give us any sense of whether this is really taking off, or you're sort of deliberately going slowly to learn, or roughly where you're at with heat as a service?
Oh, we are very happy with the results, but for sure it takes time. What is our time consuming? So first we have to train all our distribution partners, which are mainly the installers, and this needs time to get that recognition in the market. But nevertheless, we are very proud of the increase of sales we have, and I believe we are one of the best performing companies now already in Germany in this business area.
Okay, and what if I'm a householder in Germany, do I buy a heat as a service contract from the installer? Do I buy it from Viessmann, or do I buy it via the installer from Viessmann? How does it work from a customer's perspective?
Yeah, we do it in a multi-channel way. So on the one hand, for sure, we really support our traditional sales channel that the installer can offer purchasing a heating device, but as an alternative, they can also offer heating as a service. And in this case, the customer signs a contract between the end customer and Viessmann Solution and Services. So the installer has the role as an agent. In addition, we have also a lot of online activities, which become more and more relevant. So they take really relevant share of our sales, where we generate online leads and sell via our installers at the end.
Okay, and are you doing this with what range of products? With traditional boilers, with heat pumps? How wide is the product portfolio in your heat as a service activities?
Yeah, as mentioned, the customer can choose, and I guess this is one of the key issue. You know, the right technology is depending on the building of the customer, so we mainly use gas boilers currently in heating as a service, a couple of oil boilers, but this is not really significant, and we see a growth in the heat pumps. Right now, we still have a restriction on the funding side here in Germany that an end customer gets higher funding if he purchases a boiler than signing a service contract here. So that's the reason why heat pumps are not as successful as we would like to see it.
Okay. Andreas, thanks very much. That gives us a really good introduction to what Viessmann is doing in this area. Let's move on to, we'll come back to you shortly, but move on to our second guest, Nikolaj Kipp, who's Chief Consultant at the Danish District Heating Association. Hello, Nikolaj.
Hello, Jim.
Nikolaj, Denmark's famous, as many listeners I'm sure know, for district heating. You're working for the District Heating Association, who is getting involved in heating homes on an individual basis with heat pumps. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a bit about why a district heat association is getting involved with individual heating systems and how it's doing that?
Yeah, I think first of all, as you mentioned, the district heating is covering a large part of the heating demand in Denmark. It's more than 50%, I think close to 60% of the demand is covered by district heating. And mm-hmm. in my point of view, district heating is really heat as a service. So heat as a service is not something that district heating can't see themselves do. As you mentioned, there's a difference between the individual heating and the district heating. I think there's two main reasons why we're doing this now. One is there's a big push from the Danish government to phase out all fossil fuels by 2030 in the heating sector. Mm-hmm. Also, with the large part of district heating we have today, it's pretty clear there's a lot of areas where district heating won't come out. End users out there typically have an oil boiler, gas boiler, or wood pellets, and it's difficult to get them into the transition to heat pumps. It has been for many, many years in Denmark, and a lot of different models have been tried out. So what we're offering now is it's just like you would be part of a district heating company. You become part of a consumer-owned corporation. where the corporation owns your heat pump at your house. The corporation makes sure it's the right heat pump for your house, installment is right, any service and maintenance is taken care of for a fee you pay every year or every month. And then when time comes, the heat pump will be taken out and a new model will be installed. So we're trying to give the same experience as if you were a district heating customer. You don't really have to worry about where your heating is coming from.
Okay, so as a customer, if I'm on a heat pump heat as a service contract, is my contract quite similar to the contract I'd have if I was connected to a district heating scheme?
Yeah, more or less. The district heating you pay per kilowatt hour heat you're using. That is a bit expensive to do individually with the heat pump. So we're looking at different schemes to do this, but more or less you pay per usage of heat.
And how mature or widespread is this? Is this something new? Is it growing? Has the model been proven and it's a matter of rolling it out further?
It's in a district heating point of view, it's relatively new. It started up 2 years ago. A small district heating company in Denmark started it up, and now we are working with them and taking the model on a national wide scheme. It hasn't started up yet. It will probably early next year. It's the model as it is now is available all over Denmark, but it's a small scheme model. It's run by a relatively small company, and they don't have the resources really to handle a large demand of heat pumps.
Okay. Nikolai, thanks for that introduction. That gives a really clear picture of what you're doing in Denmark and fascinating to see. I understand the logic now as to how district heating companies are moving into this area. Our third guest today is our heat as a service expert here at Delta EE, Rox Petersey. Hello, Rox.
Hi, John.
Rox, heat as a service sounds simple, but as you unpack it, there's a whole load of complexity underneath, and you've got a nice way of simplifying complexity. So, can you help us understand the different spectra for heat as a service in terms of the different risks that are involved and who takes them?
Yeah, so for us, heat as a service is about transferring risks from customers to service providers. There's the financial risk, obviously, of offering a leasing or rental of an appliance or providing a customer with credit. There's the technical risk of maintaining and repairing the appliance. There's the performance risk, which then comes in if you're charging on the basis of heat produced or warmth provided. So you care how efficient the appliance is operating. There's also the energy supply risk. So if you're covering the cost of energy you consume, then depending on how you pass that on to the customer. And then, of course, the behavioral risk, which would come in if you're providing an outcome, since that will be impacted by the timing of demand and behaviors like opening windows. And then, of course, also regulatory risks, which is true for any business model.
So that's quite a lot of risk that a service provider could take, and I guess that's why we see a spectrum of heat as a service offerings that take different amounts of risk. Is anyone taking all of those risks that you've seen, or is that heat as a service nirvana that we might hit at some point in the future?
Only in trial stages. Currently, our suppliers taking on all of those risks. In practice, the commercial offers generally don't take on that behavioral risk because that's the one where you need to have a lot of data in order to price it correctly. But I think it's something that we'll see more and more in the future.
Okay, and we've heard from Andreas and Nikolai about their activities. How I alluded to the heat as a service sector growing, gathering momentum across Europe. how widespread is it? Are we at the very beginnings of this? Are we a year or two after the beginning of it? Can you give our listeners an idea of how widespread heat-as-a service is at the moment?
I mean, so in terms of sales, the base is very low today, but yeah, certainly lots of momentum. We're seeing more and more providers offering heat contracting in Germany, where it's not that new. Finance and maintenance models are starting to take off in France for the last 2 years or so. And then in the Netherlands, boiler rentals are actually already fairly common, and that's getting extended to heat pumps now. And all of this is kind of paving the way for more advanced low carbon heating models, like we've heard about from Eneco in one of our podcast episodes last season.
Okay, so numbers still small, but number of companies active in this growing quite quickly.
Yes, certainly.
Andreas, Nikolai, I'd like to come back to you now. And you've both been working on this topic for some time. I'm really interested in what you've learned from your customers, because this is, well, with individual heating appliances, a new offering for customers. And what have you learned from your customers over the last year or two? And what's been really hard about developing this new business area? Andreas, maybe start with you and then go to Nikolai.
Yeah, so for sure, the first touch point is in the sales funnel with our customers. And I guess in this period of the customer journey, the hardest thing is to explain that heating as a service is not financing a heating device. So,
and is that something customers automatically think? Have you found that that's what they jump to?
So they go to the bank and say, okay, there I guess get an interest rate of XY. If I sign for the service contract, I have to pay double for the heating device. And then you have to explain, yeah, it's included maintenance, it's included repair, chimney sweeper, financing for sure. And you have to explain the cost elements. The customer understands this, but it takes time, and this is something you don't want to have in your sales pitch. So this is, let's say, the biggest challenge we have actually in the acquisition process.
How do you deal with that? How can you deal with that, or can you overcome that?
Yeah, we are very transparent in our costing. So we try to mirror the customer his real expenses he would have if he purchased a boiler. So we try to explain the cost for maintenance, repair, for the chimney sweeper, and compare it with our offer. So this is the way how we do it. In addition, we have also agents, customer agents, who are able to explain the situation on the phone.
Okay. And does that, how does that, it sounds like the sales, the lead time can be quite long for that. So is that difficult if someone's got a boiler that's failing or a heating system that's failing and needs to be replaced quickly? How does that, or can you only really work with people who have got more time to think about it?
No, that's not the way. I guess it doesn't consume time, but it has an effect on the conversion rate for sure. Because not every customer goes into the dialogue and wants the explanation on the cost. So we have also a lot of customers who really have a cold unit at home and decide in 1 or 2 days. But to be honest, also the cycle time from lead to sales for heating as a service in general is shorter than our colleagues have in purchasing a boiler.
Okay. Nikolai, how does that compare to your experience in terms of what you've learned about customers? Is it a bit easier in Denmark because there's more familiarity with district heating, or do you have the same or different challenges to Andreas?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's easier in Denmark or not, but the challenges are very similar in getting customers to understand the basics of the business model. The there's a difference between the B2B segments and the B2C segments, where a business owner is probably more likely to understand this, and if you can provide him with a cheaper heating, he's interested. The private customers, that's a different story. In general, I think heating is a very low key interest point for anyone. So if you live in a house and your heating works well, I think it takes some very good arguments to get anything in there to replace that heating. There's been a lot of analysis of this. One from Denmark is there's a lot of gas customers in this analysis, and they were asked, if you save this much money, would you change your gas boiler? And if they could save roughly around 900 euros mm-hmm. per year, one third of the gas customers would change their installation. And that's
quite a big saving to achieve, isn't it?
Yeah, that corresponds to your yearly savings if someone gives you a heat pump for free. So it's really hard to get the private customers interested in this. It helps a bit with the green transition and the CO2 reductions, but it's still a large barrier, especially then if you come with a new model they haven't really heard about. So
I guess, Nikola, you're trying to do two things at the same time. You're trying to get customers from gas boilers to heat pumps and onto a heat as a service contract. Andreas, mm-hmm. you're changing one thing at a time with your where you're selling a new gas boiler. Andreas, do you think from what you've learnt, how niche an offering is heat as a service? Do you think it, because I talk to some people and they say, yeah, vast majority of people will want to own their heating appliance. They're not going to be interested in this. And I talk to others who believe that over time, the subscription or service model will grow and grow and grow. How big do you think the addressable market is here for heat as a service?
I would say today, if you say the majority wants to purchase a boiler, you are right. And the market share of heating as a service currently is very low. So, but my experience based also on my former jobs is that today, I guess, you have the potential to sell roughly at 10% of our customers a heating contract. But at the same time, I'm very convinced that the market share will increase in the next years. Mm-hmm. So there are some obvious drivers. On the one hand, the people learn that heating as a service is an attractive product. They learned it when they leased a car. So why shouldn't they learn it when they lease a heating device? So, and in the car business, there are roughly 30 to 40% of the cars purchased by a leasing agreement. So, and the second point is that we go more and more for renewable systems, and the initial cost, the investment costs are much higher for these systems. So, and with a service contract, we can keep more or less the running costs for the customer, so he can avoid the initial costs very easy. And, you know, some of our customers are still very careful with the new technologies, even when they are reliable today. But with the service contract, you give a 10 or 15 year guarantee on the device.
Rox, how does that compare to the customer research that you've carried out on the appeal of heat as a service? So have you found that the interest, generic interest in heat as a service is niche or potentially significant parts of the market?
I mean, so we've done several focus groups and customer surveys on this, and concerns do, of course, come up about being tied to an expensive contract for a long time, or not being able to control the heating, or just being confused by the description because it's a new sort of concept. But if you can address those issues and also obviously help the customers to see the benefit, which is something that we tried to do in our last survey, then you find that actually the majority of people do find this appealing. It's not just an issue. I think in our last survey, we had about 60% of respondents saying that they found the concept of somebody else taking on all these risks for them appealing.
Okay, well, we'll come on to how big it might get when I get the crystal ball out at the end of the podcast. I'd like to turn attention to risks back to Roxy, your framework of financial, technical, performance risk, energy price risk, and even behavior risk. So Andreas and Nikolai, how hard is it for you to take on these risks, and how do you make the business model work for your companies, for the service provider, when you're taking on these risks? How challenging is that? Andreas, maybe start with you and then go to Nikolai.
Yeah, so if you divide into technical and financial risk, I think the technical hurdles are not too high. You know, we are a manufacturer, we have a service team in our company, and we got to have a lot of experience about potential repairs and so on. So I guess here we can make a tick in the box. This is really not too difficult to handle. Yeah. So then we have the financial risk, and these are more or less, from my point of view, related to potential insolvencies of our customers, so that they are not able to pay. Mm-hmm. This for sure we have to reflect, but on the other side, the heating has a very strong relation to the building. And yep. Even if the house owner is not able to pay, you have access to the building. And in most of those cases, the ownership of the building will change, and you have the opportunity to find your next customer there. So the situation that you have to write off an appliance is really very unlikely, and so you have to calculate this kind of risk in your product calculation.
Okay, and have you had situations where the customer isn't able to pay? Are you learning about how big that risk is still through as your portfolio grows?
No, we didn't have that situation so far. But to be honest, for sure with Corona, everything is a bit more complex. But I can tell you, no unit is at risk so far.
Okay. And what about the harder ones, performance risk, even energy price risk? Do you think there are limits to how much risk you can take? Are you learning where to draw that line, or do you think you'd be able to, over time, take on more and more risk from the customer?
Yeah, so to be honest, at the moment, we meter the energy at the gas meter. So the efficiency performance risk is, to be honest, at the customer. We don't like it, but we ask our customer, what do you prefer, to have an installation of a heat meter for these and those cost instead of having the efficiency risk? And they really said, no, please avoid this heat meter because on the one hand, these are additional costs, and on the other hand, the quality of the heat meters are not the same as the gas meter. And our surveys say that our customers prefer this. I guess this topic becomes more relevant for heat pumps.
Yes. Yeah, I guess so. So on that, Nikolai, how do you manage the, or which risks do you take, particularly, I guess, around the performance risk? Are you taking that risk around the heat pump, or are you, is the customer taking that risk?
Yeah, I totally agree that the performance risk is the hardest risk when it comes to heat pumps. I've been working with this for quite some years now, and started off in a startup where we took the performance risk. And it's not really a problem doing that, but you have to be slightly conservative in your calculations. So it probably ends up with customers paying too high a price for the heating, because the company takes the risk, and depending on the building, the performance can be 20-30% different. So in my experience, the performance risk, if you put that on the company, you end up charging too much for the heat for quite a large part of your customers. So in what we're doing now from the district heating, the actual performance of the heat pump is the risk of that is being put on the end customer. And what we offer is we give them a heat pump that is installed correctly, so they get the performance of the heat pump that they should in their house.
Okay, and how do you see that evolving? Because with more connectivity, with more sensors, you can learn more about the building physics of the houses that you're heating at relatively low cost. Can you see that in time you might be more comfortable taking that performance risk? Or do you think that's always going to be hard because there are things that you can't control and therefore things that you need to price in to take that risk?
And no. I think it will be easier in time to take the risk, but I still think it will be too expensive for a large part of the end users. If you have several thousand customers, you can't really operate with several thousand different prices, so you have to sort of have some similarities there. Also, I think it depends very much on the price of electricity. In Denmark, we've seen that more or less all the taxes on electricity used for heating is gone from next year. So the price of electricity that is used for the heat pump is relatively low.
Okay, and so that also might make it easier to take the risk.
So it doesn't have the same impact if your performance drops by 10% or 15%.
Andreas, just briefly from you, what's your view about the future? Can you see that the performance risk is a risk that customers might want you to take in the future, or do you think you'll keep it roughly where it is today?
I believe for heat pumps, they want to get rid of the risk. And I believe in future we can offer products with this feature, because step by step you got all the data from the heat pump. So the question is, how do you create your pricing? On the one hand, you have the electricity cost, which makes it price sensitive, but there you can use pricing formulas, and this is fully accepted by the customer. The second point is the temperature of the heating system. There you got measures from the heat pump device, and I guess you have to reflect this temperature, or let's say the situation of the secondary heating system, as we say in Germany, in your pricing, and then it will work. But we are not there at the moment.
Well, I think it's a fascinating area as electrification of heat grows and as heat as a service grows. I think there'll be lots of exciting propositions around this and the performance risk in the future. Now it's time to bring out the Talking New Energy crystal ball. This week, I'm setting the dial to 2030, so 10 years ahead. And let's see whether this could be the decade for heat as a service. So I'll ask each of you how widespread you think heat as a service will be by 2030. I'll leave it up to you how you express that, whether it's a percentage, a number, or just a description of how widespread that's going to be. And very briefly, because we're running out of time, the biggest challenge to getting to this point by 2030. Nikolai, let's start with you. How widespread will heat as a service be in 2030?
In a Danish perspective, I think it'll be very widespread. As I mentioned, district heating is per se heat as a service. So yep. We already covered a lot of that. Also, I think a big push for this will be the green transition. I'll put it this way, if we successfully replaces the oil boilers and some of the gas boilers and wood pillars with heat pumps, I believe a large part of those installments will be heat as a service. Biggest challenge is, I think, keeping the security for the end customers. They know what they have today. So far, it's mainly been startups introducing a new business model, and that creates some uncertainty for the end customer. There's a few thousand heat as a service installments today in Denmark, and most of them are made by a Danish oil company, which is a bit funny. But they have the security from it's a well-known brand in Denmark, so it gives you some security. And I think you need to probably get some of the electricity companies or the producers, get them more involved as well, to create that sense of security.
Okay. Thanks, Nikolai. And let's hope that it gets their interest. Andreas, from your perspective.
Yeah, first, the question is in which market? Germany, yep. Denmark, Italy.
pick your own market. Pick Germany to keep it simple.
Yeah, so my comparison is in 2030, the model is well known and we will reach comparable market share to car leasing. So I'm quite sure because we see that also in other areas like PV renting or subscription models, we are getting closer and closer to that level. So why not with the heating device? For us, the biggest challenge to come to that level is today the funding regime. So in the heating as a service situation, we need at least the same funding from the state as the private customer gets if he purchased the unit. This is not the case at the moment, but we hope that the situation will change and then we can put our focus on the renewable market, which is the future, especially in 2030.
Well, good luck with your lobbying activities, Andreas, to get those regulations changed. Last but not least, Rox, how about yourself? And you've maybe got a harder job because you're looking Europe-wide, but how would you answer the question?
So I think realistically, by 2030, more sort of widely across Europe, we could probably see around 15% of heating systems sold in service contracts. Obviously, a lot more in some countries and perhaps a bit less in others. In terms of challenges, I think there's probably enough customer demand and certainly enough drive from the industry. But for me, the biggest barrier will be regulations and whether or not those regulations allow suppliers to bundle all of these products and services together. And at a sort of reasonable cost for both the suppliers and the customers.
So more lobbying to be done as well in other countries.
Yep.
Well,
if I could just add to that in a European perspective, I did a study a couple of years ago looking at prices of heating in different countries in Europe. And on all of Europe in my little study, they showed that the price of heating is cheaper with the fossil fuels, the oil and gas boilers, than heat pumps. The only place where heat pumps comes out better is, in fact, in Denmark. So, and that's due to the low prices on fossil fuels and the relatively low taxes on fossil fuels, and then also a high tax on your electricity in most of Europe. And in Denmark, we have a very low, and next year, no tax really on electricity for the heat pumps. And I think that has to change because if you look at it from a company's perspective, if if you need to invest in a fossil fuel heating source, you would need some security for that. And everyone is expecting this to change within the next 10 years to a greener transition. So I think the framework needs to support that the renewable options are the cheapest before that heat as a service really will kick off in Europe.
Well, I think there's a lot of people very jealous of the changes that you're making in Denmark on electricity taxes for heating, Nikolai. We better finish there. Time's got the better of us. It's been a fascinating discussion for a really important topic, I think. So thanks very much to my guests. Thanks, Andreas, Nikolai and Rox. And thank you for listening and look forward to welcome you back next week. Thanks and goodbye. If you're as passionate about the energy transition as we are, then please keep in touch. You can follow us and me on Twitter, LinkedIn, or subscribe to the podcasts on your chosen podcast platform. If you like the podcast and like sharing, then please do rate us. And to listen to archived episodes, to read transcripts, and to see the latest Delta EE insights, then please visit www.delta-ee.com.